Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
So, like, take off to the great white north. Beauty. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Jeez. Take off, you hosers.
Hey guys, welcome back to Hosers. This is episode 92. I'm your host, Chris Killingsworth, and joining me as always, back from out in the wild, no pun intended, but definitely pun intended, Carter Lupel. Did you run into any bears? I guess is maybe where we could start. How is your wilderness excursion?
What's going on, Chris? No, it wasn't bad.
I thought you were gonna be like, shh, yeah, I'm actually still out here. That's what the call normally sounds like when we do it on Zoom. So yeah. All the same. How was it though, man?
It was great. It was super warm and super rainy. It rained all but like two nights. So I'm happy I had a very nice north face tent to keep me dry and out of the rain. But it was great. Saw a lot of cows. Cause a lot of this hike was like you do like a patch of a, or like you'd hike like a conservation area and then you'd have to walk through farmers' fields to the next one. And so saw a lot of cows, and that's basically the wildlife that I saw.
Oh, okay. This is totally off.
No snakes actually.
That's always my concern on these hikes that Carter goes on. He's going to come up against the Massasauga rattler. You know what I'm saying? So
I came out on Massasauga Street, like when we were like deep in the woods, there's like a Massasauga road. And I was like, oh no.
Not going on that one. What were you going to say, Thomas?
You speaking about like going to farmer's field reminds me of this like YouTube series that I got recommended to me. It's basically this like English guy always wants to trek through countries in a straight line. So he like hikes the entire country, like Wales, I think he did Norway or Denmark or something, Scotland. And he's basically like set out a geo thing of a straight line, and literally it's all just going through farmers' fields. So he's like trespassing the whole way. But he like, he sometimes gets caught and like gets shit and like has to like talk his way out of it. It's actually pretty entertaining, but it's pretty chill too.
Carter, did you come into anybody who was not happy about you trespassing, or were people pretty chill?
No, they're pretty understanding, because there's like a, so this isn't like a just like a figure it out hike. Like they there's a trail association, and the houses and property that it like encroaches on, they have to like agree to it. Like you see along it like a few, there's like reroutes for the trail because like people don't want hikers on their property anymore, so you have to like, what would have been like a 25 kilometer day turned into like a 32 kilometer day because you have to hike like 7 kilometers around this enormous farmer's field to get back to the other side. And so it was like you run into that like at least once a day, someone pulls out of the trail association. So as long as you kind of like follow the signs, you're okay. But a lot of people like, they're like, oh, where are you hiking to? And I tell them like the destination, and they're like on bike. Like, no, like we haven't changed the subject, like I'm still walking. Like,
that's funny.
It's more just like people curious, that it's the most interesting part of it all.
I've seen enough horror movies to know that you never tell people where you're going if you run into them in the woods. Just saying.
Oh my God. So
these are things you got to consider.
we popped out at this church, near Bedford. I'm not going to say what church. But this pastor's wife was so sweet, but so creepy. She's like asking us where we're staying. and everything like that, like making sure we're going to get in fine that night. But she passed us like 3 or 4 times, like on our way to that hike, because you have to walk roads into certain, like into certain checkpoints. And she'd be like,
yeah,
3 more kilometers. Do you guys need water? Hotel's only 1 more kilometer. Oh, you guys are almost there. Congratulations. And she just like kept looping back. And I was like, okay, we might need to like, because we were staying in a motel that night. And we're like, we might need to actually change where we're staying. So she like doesn't find us.
She's like, don't forget to put on sunscreen, because I'll be wearing your skin soon.
Exactly.
Stalking your Instagram.
Yikes. Yeah, I hate that.
Big fan.
But I'm glad you're back, man.
Okay.
Is my mic better? Too. It is. Yeah,
you sound better. You sound better.
Cool.
Yeah, sure. It's nice to be back in civilization.
Yeah, indoors.
Good for you, man. Indoors, yeah. Thomas, speaking of getting out into the wild.
Oh, baby.
What a transition.
Speaking of being in the wilderness.
The hockey wilderness? So you, someone listening to this might be listening to it on the hockey wilderness feed. And that is something that was added last week. So we added our number 91 episode with Tony Ferrari to that feed, because we figured we talk about the wild enough, and also like people are interested in general hockey stuff anyways, they listen to whatever that. And I went to HQ, I went to SB Nation HQ on this.
We flew there. We flew there. We boarded a plane.
Yeah. I did a whole speech and proposal and pitch about how Hosers should be on hockeywilderness.com. So it is. So it is on that feed now. That hasn't been used since Ryan Quigley, great dude, past editor of HW, used it back in December of 2019. When the wild kind of were not very fun. So this is even better. So it's going to be pretty chill. Like if you're listening to it on the normal feed, it'll still be there. So it'll be kind of double feed, which can be confusing and kind of hard. But if you literally just search Hockey Wilderness, you'll also find Hosers and the old Hockey Wilderness episodes in the same feed, or you can just search Hosers and then do the normal feed, which most of you probably are listening to that. So yeah, so it's totally chill. That's pretty much up. Date, if you're listening to the normal feed, you don't have to do anything. So
yeah. So to summarize, if you already subscribe on all the other places, that's not changing. Yeah. And if you're new, welcome. You can find us on hockeywilderness.com. And yeah, I mean, it's exciting. I think like I've been writing there for a while. Thomas obviously is the managing editor. Carter is a tremendous writer who would not shock me if he ended up writing something here and there at some point or another.
I should put the Goon blog on. It's like perfect off-season content. So
it's so good. Carter wrote this thing we talked about and didn't really do much with the idea of doing like a Substack type thing. And Carter wrote this like super, yeah, Puck is excited too, as you can tell. But he wrote something that was really cool and really compelling about, you know, goons and their usage in the game. So yeah, Thomas,
I'm right here.
Okay. So, let's talk about some things that have recently gone on in the league this past week. Thomas, where do you want to get started?
I guess we might as well just stick with the theme just briefly and talk about Fiala re-signing and re-upping for 1 more year and what kind of it means.
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes sense to just go 1 year and kind of bet on yourself, because you're going to remain a restricted free agent. So his salary can only go up, like literally, unless he signs another deal that is longer term, which I don't see happening, that it'll go down. But it also gives the Wild another chance. It's kind of like a win-win situation that the Wild have another chance to go long-term with them. And I think they want to, but they just were under such like concentration of getting Kaprizov re-signed and like Eriksson Ek re-signed and all those guys, that to worry about trying to get Fiala on a long-term deal that makes sense for the future salary-wise was just too much. So it kind of just pushes it down the road. You might end up paying a little bit more, but he's a wonderful player. So I've seen some hot takes about Fiala and Kaprizov especially, but
I think the Kaprizov situation makes it a little bit challenging. where it's almost like they can't, like if the intention was to re-sign Fiala long-term, and they're, you know, hyper-focused on making the Kaprizov money work, it is a little bit frustrating because from a cap perspective, it almost feels like if they were able to get a little bit of an understanding of where Kaprizov was going, they may have been able to sign Fiala to a longer term. Do you think there's any risk of things not going the way that they want them to on Fiala's side? I think we've been hyper-focused on what happens with Kaprizov, but do you foresee a situation where, you know, Fiala might say, okay, well, if you guys can't commit to me long-term, I'm going to go somewhere else. Is that something that is on your radar a little bit?
I think he wants to stay in Minnesota from everything that I'm reading and everything he's talking about. And of course, this is just from like an outside perspective, but I think he wants to stay where he is currently and kind of established because he kind of sees a small young core there. And like the future, like where else are you going to go where there's like a really big prospect pool of like potential and you're already gelled in within the team.
Right.
So it is a risk salary wise though, because also the Parise and Suter buyouts go up to 12 million combined next season compared to four. So that kind of shrinks everything down, but you'll also have Kaprizov resigned and not have to worry about that anymore. And next year, I think is just like Jordan Greenway is up, I think. And like, that's pretty much it. So the ELCs are going to be make it a lot easier with Rossi and Boldy and Addison already there. So I think it might shoot them, like they might shoot themselves in the foot if Fiala just goes off and warrants like 7 million. But he's also like, they really tried to shortchange him. Like they tried to offer him like 5 years at like 6 mil. And like, that's not the type of player he is. I think he's more towards the 7 and 7.5, but it might just be because he's seen as like the secondary right wing, but he scored 40 points in 50 games still. And that was on like, and his most common line mates were Ryan Hartman, who's never played center in the NHL before. And he was doing it this year. And Marcus Johansson, who is terrible. So like, those were his most common line mates, and he still scored 20 goals. So
it's gonna go sour for the Wild before it goes sour for Fiala. Like he's not gonna devalue himself playing with a team on an upswing, right?
Yeah, I worry a little bit with things like that because obviously the dead cap space is a conversation for the Wild going into this upcoming season, although it's not hit as hard until next season. But I think these are things that you still have to be cognizant of. And I think the whole fan base will be able to have this like humongous sigh of relief once Kaprizov is done. And done could be one of two ways, right? Whether he stays or he goes. I am super optimistic that he stays, as I'm sure a lot of people listening are. But, you know, at the same time, do you think that Garen is preparing for a world where maybe it doesn't work out?
I don't think so from all the comments that he said, because he had a media availability after Fiala resigned and he basically was like, I have no worry about like resigning Kaprizov at all. Like, it's not my problem. It's like, he didn't say it's not my problem, but he said the like KHL threat, he was basically like, that's another team I don't care about. Like, I'm going to try and still do the same process. And it sounds like they're finally, from everything that also Michael Russo reported, that they're finally going and trying to get to a 4, 5, or 6 year deal instead of Minnesota wanting 7 or 8 years and then Kaprizov wanting 3, because then I'll walk him straight to free agency.
Exactly.
So if four, honestly, if it's 5 years, that is fine. Like that is completely fine for the type of player he is and his age too. Like he's still old enough that like 5 years takes him to 29. Like that's a normal year to hit unrestricted free agency. Like, you're getting all of his prime years, and so it doesn't really matter. And like, who knows what type of player he'll be at that age? So, like,
These are all things that, you know, we got to consider. You hit on something a few minutes ago about, you know, them being able to lean on their ELCs, and I know something you wanted to talk about was talking a little bit about, you know, if a team can have too many rookies. And I think as we are in this kind of flat cap situation right now for the next little while because of COVID, I often think how many teams we're going to see with a lot of rookies on the team, just because of their cap situation. Minnesota is in a position, in my view at least, where they've got talented forwards that are you know, ready to make a difference. Like, I think Boldy's ready to go, as we saw a little bit last year. What are your kind of immediate impressions on that, Thomas, just around what too many rookies look like? And I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
So I think compared to other teams around the league, the Wild will have a lot more potential rookies that are high-end rookies. Like, you could always have the players that are at your bottom of your lineup that are rookies and trying to make it just in the league that are like 23, 24. And you'll have a lot of that because they're cheap. But then at the same time, like Minnesota, you want to have those guys playing up your lineup. So is it like putting too much pressure on them to really rely on that development going the way that they want? It probably doesn't help because of where we are geographically, but the most recognizable situation that is kind of similar is Toronto with Nylander, Marner, and Matthews. And with them, they kind of, especially with Nylander, they gave him his NHL debut the season before in 2014-15. 2015-16. And then Matthews is dropped.
That's right.
They gave him that and gave him that experience. Maybe that's Addison because he was able to play, I think, three games because of the COVID lockdown and stuff and them having no defensemen. So they had to get called up. But maybe that's him getting a little bit of experience. But at the same time, it's a lot to put on really talented guys like Rossi and Boldy at the same time. That's just tricky. Like, it's, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the lineup is going to be. And of course, like, every team that goes into this situation wants to downplay it. Like, we're going to give our guys all the chances. We're signing veterans to maybe do a stopgap just in case they're shit. But I don't see like them not making the team after camp, honestly.
Carter, you probably played on lots of teams growing up that had a lot of rookies. Like, what's your kind of viewpoint on that? Do you think that they can have success immediately? What are your thoughts?
I think so. I think it's a completely, like, I think it's the nature of how the sport is now, more than a cap thing and more than a contract thing and more than a business thing, to be completely honest. Because even when I played hockey, like, it was a veterans team, and that was only like 10 years ago, right? And
yeah,
if you look at like the NHL and how it's grown and its like investment and development in like growing the youth, right? Like, it's a, like, people don't like have a good like midget season anymore or like juvenile season, then go on and play tier two hockey and then crack the NHL anymore. You know what I mean? Like, that's unheard of. Like, kids are starting to, like, you know, they're like NHL ready by the time they're 10, right? Like, the level of investment that people have in them. So like, these, I think it's the nature of like how people are training and the business of starting young is happening, right? And so I don't think the NHL is like anymore like an older guy's game or like a bruiser's game. It's a game that's for these young, like, hyper-focused, hyper-developed, like, players that have been in the system their entire lives. Like, they have schools and they have camps and they have everything that they've been going to since they've had skates on, right? And so I think it's absolutely a young person's game. I had a point and I lost it. But I lost my point. Sorry about that, guys. But you'll see a lot of younger guys cracking the bubble so fast because, like, you have to be, that was my point. We always talk about you have to be so good to even be bad at hockey. Like,
yes.
Anybody who has eyes on them is so much better than like any other hockey player around them. Like,
right.
If that makes sense. Like, if your name's being talked about, like, you're so good and so ready. All you really need is like a fine tuning, or you need to put a stronger bolt in a place where there's a weak bolt, or like something like that. Like you have to be so good at such a young age and so fast to even be considered. And so I think like the pool is so big of these young, like hyper talented athletes. Like I think it's, you're going to see the game get progressively younger even now, like as the years go by, right?
Well,
and it used to, sorry, go ahead, Thomas.
Well, I was just going to say, like, it's really more specific to Rossi too. Like he was heralded as the most NHL ready prospect, like other than Lafreniere, like on his draft day. Like it was just the way that he's built, and he's still 5'9" and he might have grown by then, by now, but like he is built like a truck. Like it's those guys that like are under training since they're like 12 that you were talking about, that they're like doing strength training and stuff that hasn't been done like in a decade. So there, it's like, it's stuff that's they're doing now is that creating more of these young talented players that every year in the draft, you're kind of finding these like gems that are just suddenly like a couple, even a year, even like this draft, they're still talented players. Like it's not on a down year or whatever, but that are just ready, that they could just play it now. And like, and you're even finding teams. Like, yeah, go ahead.
No, like I was just gonna, like, as soon as you start to see like the Thorntons and the like Foligno's and even the Crosbys and the Ovechkins and guys like that, kind of that have like ties to the old NHL, like pre like, well, I guess Ovechkin was, they were the 04 lockout, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like any guys that have ties to like that lockout, I feel like as soon as we see them like naturally age out of the game's just gonna, like you said, be passed out, like the torch is gonna be passed to these guys who are ready to hop in, like not even just because of a Habs, I'm a Habs fan, but if you look at guys like Cole Caulfield, like he's a little mouse and he came in and he made waves, you know what I mean? And that's unheard of as someone who like grew up watching hockey, that was like a tough guy, like fridge on skate sports, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, even like everything. Sorry, Chris.
No. Go ahead, buddy.
Well, I was just going to say,
I do a lot of talking. It's all you.
It's okay. It's okay. I was just going to say, like, even down to the minors and like college and everything, like everyone's just so much better that you need certain skills to make it in the NHL. And like Caulfield obviously has a shot and like agility and stuff, so he could just get by on that. Where it's like, it's where you run into problems is like when everything isn't kind of tuned up to that level. Like you don't have that NHL vision, but like those attributes are getting into younger and younger talent. Like you're finding players that could just step in, because even if they have like a lackluster skating mobility or something like is not right with like their stick handling, they're just like can't handle the puck at the high speed, but they have like a great shot, or they just know where everyone is because they've been playing hockey all their fucking life. But
And not discrediting experience, like you saw Caulfield folds against the Lightning because it was like he didn't have the experience to play against,
literally playing against an all-star lineup. So
I'm not discrediting discrediting experience or time in the league. That's obviously like, it's, you need it like to fine tune those skills, right? And to like develop the hockey, your hockey IQ and your hockey like reactivity at that pace, right? But yeah, a lot of these guys are, and that was my point about like just replacing one cog in the wheel. Like as soon as you like replace it with a stronger piece, they're ready to go, right? And then all that will really like prove them right or wrong is time in the game, you know, on that stage.
Well, and I think that there's a couple things there. So for me, we're going to see players that have hit 1,000 games in the league by the time they're like 30 years old. Yeah. Like that's going to be a thing, right? Because we're seeing players come into the league earlier now. So we're going to have a handful of guys playing at 18, 19, 20 years old. And 1,000 games used to be like this thing that only grizzled vets would get. And that's largely because they were entering the league like in their mid 20s rather than, you know, like early 20s. Right. So yeah, I think that
4 years at college, then they would play in the ECHL or the AHL.
They'd all, Exactly. They'd all play their OA years in major junior or whatever that looks like. So that's one part of it. The other side is, and I think this is kind of the part that I'm excited about, is that, you know, we see some role players now, but I bet in the next 5 years, like to your point, Carter, with some of like the old guard being phased out. And I don't mean that in like a disrespectful way, but
no,
like
they're eventually, just gonna age out. Yeah.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Like there's, you know, no more Patrick Marleaus, no more Joe Thorntons, no more Sidney Crosbys or Ovechkins. And that will be a sad day when that happens. But what I think that will allow for is a speedier game. Obviously it's not going to be as much holding and checking as much as we've seen. And even now, like, you know, you watch highlights from 5 years ago to today, the game is drastically different, right?
Yeah.
What I'm excited about is you are going to have almost like a correction of role guys playing, right? Because there's going to be this entire kind of crop of kids who know the speed and skill game that we're going to have this overcorrection of guys that are playing a bit of a more rough and tumble game joining the league as well, right? So I don't think that it's going to become this sport where like those players are kind of cast aside. I think, and we've seen this in the last couple of drafts, where we are going to see size being drafted a little bit more again. We are going to see kind of that kind of toughness, you know, the checking ability and all of these different things. Because when all of those older guys who played that style of game are phased out, it's not like that component of the game isn't going to exist, right? So they're going to need something. I mean, if we look at the Wild, I look at like a Jordan Greenway or a Marcus Foligno, guys that can kind of play on the edge a little bit. It's not like there's not going to be a reason for those guys to play in the league. So we're going to see like a new crop of those kids coming up, right?
Yeah.
Maybe the, you know, that video of those like Russian kids fighting in the dressing room. You know what I'm talking about, where they're like learning how to fight. They're all coming over. That's where Kaprizov is right now. He's training them.
He's training kids,
which is he's training kids to fight.
The only difference is it's going to be at like such like a hyper level that this tough guy game is going to be at, because you can see like when Thornton's on the ice or when Stahl's on the ice or when some of the, or Marleaus on the ice, they slow the game down, right? Like they slow the game down to their pace. And it's so evident when they're in control of the puck that the speed like is dialed from a 10 to an 8, you know? And that's just because they don't have the feet that they used to have. So I completely agree that that's not going anywhere. That bruiser game that like you saw, even with Perry, people talking about like his shitty, like behind the ref antics and stuff like that. Like that's never going to go away in hockey. Like there's going to but it's just going to be at such a fast, like it's going to be, the NHL is going to start, like it's obviously one of the hardest stages to crack in the world, but it's going to become even harder once you start to like phase out the slower or like the not as like current components of the game, right? Like it's just going to be such an intense like speed and like it's just an intense game, like in all aspects of it, right?
I think a lot of this could be our last point on it or something, we can move on, but I just think it'll be a lot more targeting young players that kind of have both. Like you'll see the Tkachuks that are having like that like rat mentality of like just pissing everyone off, but then also being able to score 30 goals or score 25 or whatever, that will be able to just have everything kind of underlining that, like Brendan Gallagher, like on the Habs, or like someone that just has that like ability to piss people off, but then just like can still score a lot of goals. Like it, even you saw it this past like draft with Tyler Boucher getting drafted like way higher than everyone projected, but like,
well, and like I know that was considered a bad pick and like,
but he could still score, like he's still
right,
like,
but that's that's what I mean. It's not that he's a bad pick, and I mean if you're drafting solely on talent and projectability, I get where people were kind of, you know, not like not super tied down to that particular pick and you know wish that there was something else that could have been done. But like at the same time, like you don't necessarily know what a team values in that way, right? And like, I'm not trying to sound like a dinosaur with this opinion, but these types of things are important to teams, right? Like I can tell you that having a guy that is willing to get mixed up into things and still has talent is a complete asset. And Carter, I know you'll agree with me. Like, we've coached kids together where we've asked for a little bit more of that, because the presence of that type of player on the ice is super important, as is scoring goals. And if they can do both, then, you know, that's tremendous. But at the same time, like, you need a presence like that. You see, you know, and Tony kind of made a really great point about it last week. And I agree with him that, you know, these aren't necessarily players that you need to draft. These are players that can be picked up in free agency. Like, you know, you've got your meat that you can kind of draft, or not draft, pardon me, pick up in free agency. But like, from my perspective, you know, you need at least one or two guys on a team that can mix it up like that, and can back it up with offensive output, or you know, maybe they're a defenseman that's, you know, kind of your more prototypical defensive defenseman, stay at home defenseman that can mix it up when he needs to. But these guys are valued on their team. They're valued in the room. What do you think, Carter?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's, and just to like kind of piggyback off of that, you don't know, like, drafting is always a gamble, you know, like, you like think of all the first round picks that have never even cracked the NHL, you know, but you absolutely value like somebody who can mix it up and who's coachable and who is, who can like, and to Thomas's point as well, like, bring all aspects of the game, right? So I like, there's never lost value in somebody that is well-rounded and is coachable and like is maybe not the most projected out there. Like, I maybe that's because that was like, I always valued like work ethic and coachability over all stars, and so maybe I'm a bit of a bleeding heart for those players, but I'll take a team full of Rudys every day over like a team full of shooters. You know what I mean? And I think we see that like as well with, I always talk about how I think Trotz is just a genius with what he's done with the Islanders, and just making a successful cohesive unit out of not misfits, but like people who they didn't think would gel well together, right? So I completely agree that there's lots of value like in the kind of the underdog and the coachable, you know.
Absolutely. Shifting gears a little bit, I wanted to get your guys' perspective on all of the the seeming frustration on hockey Twitter around Owen Power's decision to go back to Michigan next year. I don't remember who it was that said it, so, you know, shame on me for this, but people talking about how this is like an embarrassing look for Buffalo, and, you know, how they should have done everything they can to make the first overall pick play in the league. I have some opinions, but I'd like to hear your guys' opinions first. Maybe we could start with Thomas. Do you think this fake outrage is warranted, or like, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's people that have like brain worms that can't think of a critical thought, or like problem solve for themselves. Like, holy shit. Like, do you want to put your own rookie, your first overall pick, in that same situation? Like, I get it with Dahlin because he was projected to be better than he is, and he's kind of bad. And maybe honestly that one extra year in Sweden would have done him good, but like, you had Eichel, you had Reinhardt, you had all these pieces that kind of like, oh, might as well just add a really high-end prospect in this because we want to make the playoffs. Buffalo isn't there anymore because they're selling everyone off, so it's going to be literally like fucking Cody Eakin or some shit playing their first line. So like, do you want to have that like Owen Power like experience that locker room? Do you want to have him in Buffalo just having that first impression of being in the NHL? I wouldn't if I was running a team. So like, so that extra year in Michigan playing with Matty Beniers and Ken Johnson can only do him good by, like, being in a really good positive environment that they're gonna win a lot of fucking hockey games. So
they're gonna win a lot of games.
So yeah, like, you might as well have fun with it and, like, keep him there while, like, you're developing more young talent. So, like, there's no, like, it's not embarrassing for Buffalo at all. Like, it's every single, like, mainstream scouting person was saying this is a down year. There's no real, like, top end talent that, like, we just hear that Owen Power is going to go first, but, like, honestly, there could be five other guys. So, like, and then they go back in and saying, like, oh, it's embarrassing for Buffalo. Like, it's not at all. Like, it's just, you do it case by case, and there might be some guys from this draft that just crack the lineup just because, like, like, I don't even know what's possible, but, like, yeah, it's not embarrassing at all. I just don't think it is.
I think the whole thing to me is, like, absolutely, like, you said brain worms. I was like, I couldn't articulate it, but that's how I feel. Yeah, like, I think it is so short-sighted for people to be upset about him going back, where, to your point, he goes and plays in Buffalo. He plays probably, what, second pairing, I would guess, like, on the left side there behind Darlene. He's probably sheltered like crazy because the team is going to be so fucking bad next year. And I'm just looking at the Michigan Wolverines, like, their hockey program for next year. So we've got Owen Power. We've also got a defenseman you may have heard of, Luke Hughes, on the back end of that team.
Oh, yeah.
Forwards, you've got first round pick for the Bruins a couple years ago, John Beecher, Matty Beniers, Thomas Bortolo, Brendan Brisson, Dylan Duke, Kent Johnson. You've got Mackie Samuskevich. You've got Michael Pastajov, the older brother of Anaheim's draft pick, who's going to Guelph. That's for another time. But, like, you could literally go and he said, like, from the beginning that he didn't get a fair, or not a fair was probably not the word he used, but, like, he didn't get the college experience, right? And despite the fact that he's going to be in the NHL for a long time, the craziness of these people in their basement writing out, like, that he needs to go and play in Buffalo and get his feet wet, and it's embarrassing to the league and to the Sabres, is asinine. Like, it is absolutely insane that he would have the opportunity to experience college, be the contender to be a national champion. Like, on paper, that is the best team in the NCAA next year by a lot. And he gets the opportunity to play with other first round picks. Almost every single person I just listed there are first round picks. So you have people that are in similar situations. Some of them are going to go play in Vegas. Some of them are going to play in Seattle, so on and so forth. But here he gets to, you know, kind of show people what he's capable of. And to your point, Thomas, about it, you know, not being necessarily this, like, glamorous draft class. Well, maybe the people who had been down on Powers are actually able to see him play, you know, in a program where he's expected to have this, you know, tremendous amount of success. They're able to see what scouts obviously saw. And he's kind of insulated in this kind of talent pool rather than go play in Buffalo. And we've got, like, Jim Smith sitting at, you know, some steakhouse in Buffalo going, this guy's a fucking bust. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, this is fucking brutal. You know what I mean? Trade Jack Eichel, you know, all this other stuff. Right. So the Eichel stuff we haven't even talked about really on the podcast a whole lot, but that's the other thing. Like, do you really want this, like, exciting moment to be overshadowed by whether or not Jack Eichel is or isn't in Buffalo? What do you think, Carter?
I completely agree with both of you guys. Like,
could you disagree just for, like, the civil discourse?
No, like, no one in their right mind could disagree with playing alongside those players in the NCAA to win a national championship. Like, my dad talks about it all. Like, my dad played Division I down in the States, and he talks about, like, because Clarkson's won it before, and he talks about how, like, how amazing, like, of a thing that is, you know what I mean? And, like, So personally, like, I'm looking at it from his standpoint. He gets to grease his wheels down in Michigan for a bit longer. He gets, to your point, Chris, more development and a national championship. And he gets to, I think he gets to come out of the gun a little hotter than he would have had he played in Buffalo this year, because he's riding off of a season with his buddies, with tremendous hockey players in a very difficult league with, knock on wood, a championship. Like, he's just going to be, he's going to be light years ahead of how he was picked this year. Like, his game's going to be infinitely better coming out of this season, with further development down there. And yeah, like, why would you want to go, like, why would you want to go play in a swamp? Like, when there's nothing good in the water, you know, like,
it's,
like, he's
Buffalo being physically and metaphorically a swamp. Is that what you're trying to say? Right.
Exactly. Like, why would you want to go to Buffalo when there's all of this, like, all these tumultuous relationships between the players and the organization, when there's nobody to play alongside that's going to really help you whatsoever? And all it's going to do is make him want to leave Buffalo the moment he gets there. And
absolutely.
And he's absolutely. Just, yeah. he's going to want to force himself out of there, and he's going to kind of fizzle away in the league, because he'd start in the league with a sour taste in his mouth, learning a bad system. Like, I hate to say it, but he's going to be learning bad hockey going into Buffalo. And
well, Granada is not terrible, but
well,
there's no one else to fucking play with. But
I don't think Granada. I'm talking about the Buffalo system, like, itself. Like, they're
just like the organization. Like, yeah,
the organization and the defensive coaching is not a conducive unit for, like, breeding great defensemen. Like,
well,
as part of a team. So I don't know.
No, I was just going to say, like, they've had these missteps with defensemen so many times. Oh, and every single time this happens, it paints, like, this target on the player's back, right? Like, remember when Ristolainen started playing in the league, and there was, like, a lot of excitement about this big defenseman that could do all of these great things. And Thomas, I know you're not terribly high on him, and that's fine, but do you not think that if he played in any other system, like, let's say that he played for Philly first instead of Buffalo, do you not think that that player is a tremendously better player for the development path and the way that they were used?
Look at Dahlin, like, the like, he turned off his offensive defenseman switch as soon as he went to Buffalo, and now it's
coming back a little bit with Granato, but you're making complete sense, Carter. I completely agree.
Yeah, so I think it's ridiculous. I don't see how anybody, and this just goes to my point, like, these keyboard warriors don't fucking watch hockey, because, like, how do you watch the game and watch?
You don't even have to watch hockey to understand. Like,
no, but that's what it's like. How do you watch one Sabres game?
Yeah,
look at what's going on in Buffalo, and then even just look at their track record for the past 5, maybe even 10 years. Like, they, like, how do you like say that it's not a good thing for him to go down and play with his buddies in one of the best teams and best leagues in the world? Like, it's insane.
Yeah. Well, I was even like, it's not to make a heartless, like, take the, like, personality or personal, like, attributes out of it, but it's also a benefit for the Sabres because they get another year of his ELC.
Yeah, like, right.
And then also, they're going to be bad
at the end of it. Like, it's,
yeah. And they're going to be bad. And then, so they're going to get Shane Wright or Brad Lambert or something out of the end of the year. And Shane Wright could play in the league next year. So, like, why not? And this ties into literally what we were talking about high end rookies playing together, but it's like, why not have Power and Wright at coming in at the same time? Like, if you get,
but you Shane could Wright. Also in Power's case, different, And I might be wrong on this, but I'm like 99% sure I'm right, is that he could play in Rochester if he really wanted to, right? Like, he could play in the AHL because he didn't play major junior and played with Chicago Steel before going to Michigan. But, like, even then, sometimes that's the path, right? Like, if you look at, like, you know, Matthew Boldy, for example, like, do you think that it was a poor decision for him to play in Iowa prior to playing for Minnesota? Sometimes you need that, regardless of how skilled you are. And I think, too, like, it's so easy to look at it, like, kind of in a vacuum and be like, hey, 18 years old, they're going to figure themselves out. I don't know about you guys, but when I was 18 years old, I went back to high school to upgrade a couple of courses when I had graduated, because I knew I wasn't mature enough for university yet, right? Like, I know that that's a different situation, but like, we're talking about maturity and what people can and can't handle in terms of bandwidth. Like, I don't know. I think that's the right thing.
Well, yeah, that's what I was talking about with the rookies, and like experience isn't a lost thing on young players. Like, they need it, right? Like,
absolutely.
What you saw with Nylander, like he cut his teeth in, like, with the Marlies, and now he's like an immovable piece in Toronto right now. And like, it's
right.
Like, you see it all the time over the NHL I don't know. It's like, I think he needs to stay. He made the right decision. He needs to stay where he's at. And a year, like, in hindsight, is a long time for how quickly business moves in the NHL, right? Like, he could be coming back, or he could be coming into a significantly different organization next season, not this coming season. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's it. My last point on it, Thomas, and then I'll shut up, because I know you want to say something, is like, we've seen this happen twice where it was nothing but a benefit to the player. Cale Makar staying at UMass,
yeah,
and another Wolverine in Quinn Hughes doing the same thing, right? Where they signed their ELC at the end of their first year. I think Makar maybe played 2 years. I'm trying to remember now. But it was the right decision. And look at the players that they were when they first came into the league. They were ready to get going. And I just think, like, you can't make that gamble with your Buffalo, knowing the kind of confidence that could be built in the next year, year and a half with him at Michigan. Sorry, Thomas, go ahead, buddy.
No, it's okay. Now I kind of forget my point.
And playing for Mel Pearson as well, like and playing against like the Jerry Yorks of the world and everything like that. Like, you're playing with these long-standing, successful, good, hard-ass coaches. Like, it's...
Yeah, like, if he decided to go into the OHL or something, you'd be like, oh, well, I don't know why you do that. But, like, it'd be kind of different, I feel like. But college is, like, so close to, like, you see so many college players just coming to the NHL red hot. So it just makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
I think... The whole thing about him, like, he could have gone to Rochester. It would have started his ELC, because college players, they don't have slides unless they come out of the CHL. Right. But then also,
that's true,
there'd be more eyes on him too. Like, they'd be like players, like, there'd be like reporters or whatever, Sabres reporters going, making the trip to Rochester to watch him play and being like, oh, this guy is so good. Why isn't he up there with the lineup and talking to him and stuff? Like, this way, Michigan is
talking,
like,
about. Are we talking about Owen Power, or are we talking about Casey Mittelstadt? Because I've never seen Buffalo reporters ever do that to a player. So interesting.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's another part that they fucking ruined. It's just like, and now he's in his own little bubble, like, in Michigan. Like, he's tied up for the year. They can't, like, call him up or anything. They can't move him.
Yeah.
He's going to be there. He's playing great hockey. So, like, it's just be patient. It makes total sense for, like, both sides. Like, it's just perfect.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool.
Thomas.
Yeah.
What do you want? What was the last thing that you want to talk about here before?
Yeah, we wrap I got about like 10 minutes. Sorry about that, boys.
Let's talk about Lundqvist retiring.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense with like the health issues and with everything like that. Like, it's like, you might as well go out on it. Like, when you're such a respected name, go out on a good note like that. And I think everyone, not happy to see him go, but like, proud the way he left. You know what I mean? Like, he's nothing but respect with how he stepped down. But I was chatting with Thomas like a little bit while you're putting puck upstairs, Chris. I'm not sure if you heard, but it just like it put into perspective again. I always like think it's because the hardest trophy to win, like the Stanley Cup, but like, Lundqvist never won a Stanley Cup. You know what I mean? And like, Luongo never won a Stanley Cup. And then it fired me up with all the people that were talking about the President's Trophy is the real trophy to win. The Cup isn't the trophy to win. And you think about guys like Lundqvist, who like dedicated their entire life to the game and never won that Cup. And you, like, it's almost like sad in a bit that that's what people talk about. And that's where my mind went. immediately, because you should be celebrating his successes like on the international stage with Sweden, like what he did for the city of New York and the and like the team, like the Rangers, and like what he was as a very like successful and talented goalie, right? So it's it, I was just like blown away that my mind went to like, oh, but he never had a cup. And it was like, it's yeah. it is the hardest thing to win in almost any sport, you know what I mean? It's like, it's crazy yeah, that people can agreed. Go their whole lives in the game and never hoist the cup, right?
Well, I think like the other side of it for me is that and I have a feeling Thomas and I might disagree on this, so I'm interested to hear what his perspective is. But like I almost feel like the year, what was it, 2012, I want to say, when they were in the cup final against the Kings,
LA, yeah.
that yeah. he could have, I think he should have left the Rangers when he had the opportunity to, in the sense that, like, I think it's so incredible that he had this legacy with the Rangers and, like, his numbers already being retired. A bunch of numbers are being retired next season. I saw Sergei Zubov is getting retired and Willie O'Ree, which of course makes perfect sense. But I see that his number is getting retired. And like, I just, you know, what a lot of people don't remember is like some of those New York teams were fucking bad. They were not good. And part of the only reason that they were able to do what they were able to do is because of Lundqvist, right? So where I get kind of like, you know, in my feelings about it a little bit is that, there was a rumor, I want to say it was shortly after that 2012 cup run where he had the opportunity to go play in Dallas, I want to say
Yeah, there's a rumor trade.
Like around the time, I remember around the time Sagan got there, if memory serves correct, that there was the opportunity for him and to go and do that. And where I like love the loyalty of some of these players, and like I'm sure this is going to make some New York fans upset with me, but whatever, wouldn't be the first time. There's this like thought that I have where teams in these types of situations should really work to make these trades happen, right? In the sense that like if he was their saving grace, and like even most recently when they had Georgiev and Shesterkin, I don't know if he'd come to North America yet, but there was this like three goalie thing that they had going on. Like he should have been out of the equation before Shesterkin even got here, so that wouldn't happen. Because I mean, obviously we didn't know that he was going to have these heart problems, and like at the end of the day, life is so much more important than hockey, and the ability to like live your life after the game is super important. But I also wonder, like, did the Rangers just like squander his ability to be successful because their teams were so bad? And like, I know, you know, to Carter's point, like there's going to be a lot of players that haven't won the cup, right? As we, you know, went from having six teams to having 32 teams, it makes it a lot harder for people to win the Stanley Cup. And I think that, you know, we're going to continue to see the likes of, you know, Luongo and now Lundqvist and Pekka, you know, I know I'm speaking specifically on goalies here for a second, but like this isn't going anywhere. And I just like, I wonder what would have been if the opportunity for him to go and play for and a Price was there.
Like
I wasn't going to go there.
No,
I wasn't
going to
go there.
But it's, yeah, like it's, but it's, there's like two sides to the story, right? Like I completely agree. Like when they're hot. And you like, do you want to give these guys who've given you so much a chance at that cup? But some of these guys, like, I feel like Lundqvist was one of those guys. Like he was like, remember the like the King of New York photo that he had like a few years back and everything? Like he was, he loved the organization. Like he loved living in New York. And like I feel like if he was given the opportunity to be like a cup contender, he'd still stay in New York. Like I think he just
I don't think he would have.
It's hard, truly. It's hard to say like though, because, like of what he's thinking though. Like you can't say like I feel like they probably had they've definitely had discussion with him.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe around 2018 when they remember when they sent that letter that basically like, oh, we're rebuilding kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like that was summer of 2018, I think, I want to say. Yeah. Oh, no, February, sorry. So just before the trade deadline, yeah. So it was in the middle of the season, and they sent out that letter that they're rebuilding. It's like they probably had a discussion around that with him. Like, do you want to still be here?
Do you want to go to a contender?
Like, at that time, he still had 3 years remaining on his contract. So, like, and he was still playing pretty damn good hockey. Like, I think 2017-18 had a .915 save percentage, 2.98, yeah, right, like, goals against. Like, and the Rangers weren't a good team. So it's like, do you want to be here, or do you want to, like, we could figure out a trade for you that you approve, kind of. I don't know if he had a no-move clause, but, like, a legend like that, you should be in discussion with, like,
yeah,
to, like, where yeah, your trade's like, going. So
you don't know what they're thinking. And I think this is, like, kind of to our point earlier about, like, the old guard aging out. Like, I feel like it's going to be so rare to see career players, like, end with the team that they started with. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's yeah. not well, how the business of hockey works anymore.
And it's always weird. Like, there was a thread on Twitter the other day, like, what are the, like, the sports photos that, you know, you can't get, like, I can't remember what the verbiage was, but essentially it was like photos of players who are, like, legends with one team and how weird they look in their jersey with the next team. So there's, like, Mike Modano on the Red Wings, and there is, like, Chris Chelios playing for the Red Wings. It's funny, they all end up on the Red Wings.
Daniel Alfredson.
Yeah, Daniel Alfredson, exactly.
Sundin in Vancouver.
Oh yeah, that one makes me sick to my stomach. But, like, and listen, I want to make sure that like I'm not speaking out of both sides of my mouth. I'm not saying this specifically to Lundqvist, because, like, if you look at the Leafs and Sundin, like, Sundin is my favorite player in the world ever. Amen. But at the same time, like, if he had the opportunity to go win somewhere else, despite how it would have broken little Chris Killingsworth's heart, then that was probably the right decision if it meant chasing the cup, right? I know people get, like, really, you know, pissy about, like, Ray Bourque and stuff when they get their cup, and it's like, oh, he left so he could get his cup. Well, yeah, but, like, if that's what the goal is, he got his cup. Yeah.
Yeah.
He got exactly what he wanted, right? And, like, even if you look at a guy like David Savard, who I just finished reading the little blurb here about the comment that he made in the news today about
ridiculous.
Montreal going to go to the cup final and win it. There's another guy who just won his cup, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of these, like, weird situations where, like, for me, first ballot Hall of Famer, like, no question in my mind that he's in the Hall of Fame despite not winning. But at the same time, I guess I just, you know, I'm in my feelings a little bit about whether or not he could have had an impact somewhere else, right? So
absolutely, he could have. Like, and I think just to Thomas's point, you don't know what they're thinking. Like, some of these guys are just lifers, and some of these guys, they want is a cup, right?
Is Lundqvist calling you right now? Because I can hear a vibration on your desk.
Oh no, that was my dad calling me.
He heard you.
He probably heard you shit talking David Savard.
Yeah.
He's gonna
It was a good pickup. We need the experience on the blue line.
Yeah. Anyways, I know we gotta wind down, guys. Thanks for a good episode, boys. I hope you guys have a great upcoming week. Thomas, anything exciting going on at Hockey Wilderness that we should be letting the fans know about?
Our top 25 under 25 is still rolling on. I'll be actually editing a post after we hang up to go on today. And yeah, I think other than that, nothing much. We'll try to stay in tune with Kaprizov signing and all that shit. I do have to say one more thing about quickly. Big news in the world is CM Punk.
He's back.
Yeah.
He's back and he's giving everybody ice cream.
Yeah. Just CM Punk.
I didn't see Owen Power do that. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
CM Punk.
Did you watch a Straight Edge Kegger to celebrate, Chris?
Oh my god. Okay, so quick Straight story. Edge Superstar. Robin and I just recently resubscribed to Shudder. People who know me know I'm a big horror movie buff. And Robin was, like, trying to find some movies for us to watch last night. She's like, how about this one? And I was like, we're not fucking watching this. No Straight chance. And then she sent it in the group chat. Yeah, that was funny.
What was it?
It's called this horror Kegger. Movie. I'll send you the trailer. It is just Kegger? Dog shit.
Oh my
it's
god, 2016. So no, 2019.
No, the movie came out in 2019, I want to say.
this is not so just a minor threat.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you like have any like even remote understanding of like the hardcore punk scene or like, you know, straight edge as a lifestyle, you're like gonna want to blow your brains out. But like here's yeah, I'm not even gonna get into it.
It's only 80 minutes long. Okay.
Maybe I'll watch this. Maybe we should like watch the movie on our Patreon account and people can watch it with us. What do you think?
Don't have a Patreon. Maybe not all hockey owners will get on Patreon. We'll see our the appetite.
No thanks. I'd rather people just read Hockey Wilderness and listen to the podcast.
We'll do a bonus watch together or something.
That's just record like, while we're like watching the worst straight thing ever.
I've with done that with like yeah, it's terrible.
It's like subscribe to our level 3 Patreon where you get to watch Aladdin the original with the boys and you know give your like no one gives a shit about that. I would
sold the fucking bread.
Yes. Yeah. Oh that. My god, classic dude. Jafar, honestly, I've always felt Jafar was miscast personally. So let's
and on that anyways. Note, I have to wrap it up.
Okay, bye.
Okay. All right.
All right. See you, Carter. Love you, boys. See you later.
Love you too, buddy. For everybody else who's stuck with us this long, remember you can listen to the podcast at Hockey Wilderness, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, all of those good places. Feel free to rate and review if you'd like. Thomas, anything else before you wrap up?
Nothing. No, I'm good. Follow the podcast on Twitter, Takeoff Hosers. Do you have a Twitter account again?
Not really. No, okay. Just the burners, buddy. The burners are in a good place. I actually think that I'll be making an appearance before the hockey season gets going because gotta, you know, be that guy. Well, I think like once I'm actually, you know, back working in the rinks and stuff again, I'll have a little bit more to say on the internet.
Yeah. Do the classic taking a picture of the lineup sheet. Do that.
Taking a picture of the lineup sheet, taking a photo from like where the scouts sit and be like, feels good to be back in a rink. Yeah. Oh my God. Gag me with a fork. Anyhow. So now that Carter's gone, do you want to talk shit about the Habs or should we just wrap it up?
We can just wrap it up. We've been too mean to him before.
Okay.
He's a sensitive boy. Yeah.
He is a sensitive boy. All right, buddy. Have a good week. And guys, we'll be back next week for episode 93. The Mitch Jacob Marner and the London Knights episode.
Okay, not Jacob Ward.
All right. Adios.
Bye.
Where my hometown used to be. This old mud is taking water. Won't be long.